Chapter 1. Mayday, Mayday. Anchorage Tower, this is McGarrity, do you copy? The Cessna's engine sputtered again, earning a mutter from Ty as he piloted the small plane through the cloud bank, obscuring his view of the Brooks Mountain Range. He was surrounded by a world of white, white clouds, white snow, unable to see anything other than the rapidly fading daylight. Static crackled in his headphones, but the tower didn't respond. He battled the wind gusts blowing in from the Arctic, his gut a tight, hard knot. Midair was not where he wanted to be in weather like this. Mayday, Mayday, Anchorage Tower, do you copy? Despite triple-checking the forecast in order to take advantage of the hour and 35 minutes of Alaskan daylight, a snowstorm had appeared out of nowhere, blown in from the Chukchi Sea. Now he found himself off course somewhere along the rugged mountain range, struggling to keep the only thing between him and the ground in the air. Come on, Nessie. That a girl. A sharp gust forced Nessie into another stomach-churning nosedive. Blood pumped hard and fast in his ears, the loud rushing pulses strangely in tune with the wind tossing him about like a trailer in a twister. Ty's insides locked into a stopper knot when the clouds parted, revealing a bowl-shaped mountain he recognized from his maps. He was so far off course, no one would look for him here. Nessie lifted and dropped, the air sucked from beneath her wings. The bounce jarred Ty's teeth. The Cessna's engine sputtered once more, pushed to the limits as it fought the force of the elements outside. In the end, the sudden quiet that came after the plane's last choking wheeze told Ty all he needed to know. Anchorage Tower, this is Ty McGarrity. Can you hear me? His stomach lurched as the plane began to lose altitude. Mayday, mayday. I'm going down. Repeat, I'm going down. He relayed his coordinates, not knowing if those systems were operating correctly or if anyone heard him. Come on, God, is this really the way it ends? Can anybody hear me? Static filled his ears as adrenaline flooded his body. Down, down, down. The raging winds of the snowstorm kept the plane aloft and prolonged the inevitable, rocking it from side to side like a sadistic tilt-a-whirl run by a drunken carny. His shoulders and arms ached as he fought to keep the nose up, every nut and bolt rattling with the force of the descent. Prayers spilled from his lips, and he apologized to God for slacking when it came to church attendance. He'd do better. Take the kids. If I make it home. Images flashed through his mind in rapid succession as he stared at the wall of white outside the window. And even though no one could hear him on the radio, there were things he needed to say. Gramps, I love you, old man. Make Logan watch some cartoons and get his nose out of a book. And Abby, don't let her date until she's 25 and has a black belt. I'm sorry about this, Gramps. Just do the best you can with the kids. A sudden burst of static crackled from the radio, and a woman's voice filled his headset. McGarrity. I can hear you. Ty latched onto the sound of the woman's voice. Get a message to my grandfather. George McGarrity in Anchorage. I will. I heard you. Treetops. That's all he could make out in the blowing white mess below him, a quick glimpse when the plane swung hard to the left. Big pointy treetops of massive pines that would rip Nessie apart before she ever hit the ground. Not a pleasant way to, was that a strip of white? Listen to me, I'll be there as soon as I can, the woman said. I'll find you. Just keep your nose up. His eyes burned from the strain of trying to make out the image, but he zeroed in on the possibility. Determination battling reality. What's your name? Yeah, that was definitely white. One small, impossibly short strip of snow-covered valley floor. He'd made it to the interior of the mountain. God, please. I can't leave them. Gramps won't last much longer. Holly. My name is Holly. The plane hit the snow, the bone-jarring impact followed by an ear-splitting noise as the wheels sank into the depths of the soft surface and were ripped off. The Cessna's belly acted like a big sled, plowing through the valley and gaining speed. Ty bounced along, strapped in his seat, unable to see anything but a rush of white, until Nessie smacked into trees. Pain hit, stole his breath, the sharp copper taste of blood and bitter cold air choking him. Time slowed as his body pitched forward and then back, jerking and yanking him like a rag doll. Dazed, he felt the Cessna list to one side before she settled with a jarring thunk of metal. A whooshing rush rolled over him, too strong to fight. Shivering from the cold, he felt himself slipping away. Holly, what are you doing? Stay where you are. Holly, answer me. Holly ignored the voice on the other end of the portable radio and frantically raced to dress. Every second counted, and considering she had to harness the dogs, she didn't have time to respond to Devon's order. Don't even think about leaving your cave. The storm is getting worse. I'll handle it, Devon continued. She stepped on the towel at the base of the hot springs pool, where she had been relaxing when Ty McGarrity's distress call had sounded, twisting her feet in the cotton to dry them, before snagging socks and hopping around on one foot while she yanked the wool over the other. Holly, I know you can hear me. Do not leave the cave. I don't take orders from you, Dev. He couldn't hear her, but the mutter made her feel better, as she raced across the cave floor and grabbed the layers she had stripped off earlier. Her hands shook as she forced herself to take the time to put them on, even though the pilot's words echoed in her head. The last thing she needed was to head out into the cold unprotected and wind up freezing as a result. Underwear, tank top, thermals, two pairs of fleece-lined leggings, a sweatshirt, her snowsuit. She dropped into the recliner behind her to stab both legs into the pants of the suit at the same time, battling the voice in her head that warned against hoping she might find Ty McGarrity alive. But she couldn't just sit there and listen, wait, and do nothing. Holly, please. Stay put. I can't do that, Dev. One boot was near the recliner, the other. Where was the other? Seriously? Come on, come on. Where are you? A man's life was at stake. If the pilot was alive, his odds were diminishing with every second that passed. And he had a family. Kids. Young kids from the sound of it. And only a grandfather to watch over them? She dropped to her knees and looked beneath the coffee table. You've got to stay more organized, Hall. She'd been so ready to escape to her cave she'd stripped as she'd entered the innermost cavern, tossing her clothes with every step. But there it was. From her position on all fours, she spied the boot by the bed. How did it get all the way over there? She scrambled up, carrying the first boot in her hand. Holly, for the love of, answer me. Holly groaned as she positioned the boots to shove her feet inside, reaching blindly with her free hand to find the radio she'd dropped onto the bed after responding to Ty McGarrity. Devon, I'm closer. And I'm going. I'm putting together a team. You are to stay put. I'm not going to argue with you. Holly out. She heard his growl of frustration loud and clear despite the static. Holly, will you let me do my job? She twisted the knob on the radio, muting Devon's voice. As head of security for their off-the-grid compound, Devon took his job very seriously, as he should. But sometimes, what was it with men and their egos? Seriously. Boots tied, she raced across the cave floor and up into the outer chamber where her sled dogs waited, away from the heat of the pool but protected from the harshness of the weather. No rest for you guys, she called, ignoring their sharp barks as she gathered up harnesses and rigging and set about preparing them. Thankfully, her team was well behaved, and the dogs knew the drill, pacing around her and barking as they waited their turn to be harnessed, eager to see where they were going, and no doubt picking up on her emotions about the need to rush. Finally, she stepped on the runners and forced herself to inhale a steadying breath. "Easy," she commanded, the order for the team to go slow until they left the cave. She hated the time it took for her to fasten the gate over the opening of her sanctuary, but it had to be done to keep unwanted animals from getting inside. But then, "Hike! Moxie, hike!" The command to mush had Moxie and all the other dogs digging in, and they were on their way, racing down the mountain. The trail to the valley was winding but well known by the dogs. Once they made it to the valley floor, she let them run full out toward the far end, careful to stick to the edge of the forest so that she didn't inadvertently pass the wreckage. The plain wasn't on fire. She tried to take comfort in that as she searched the darkness for signs of the crash, praying feverishly that the pilot wasn't dead. Holly knew they were getting close when the sled sailed past a wheel. Then she saw it. The small plane was nose first into the trees at the rim of the valley. Her heart stopped in her chest. How could anyone survive that? "You of all people should believe in miracles. Show some faith." She set the snowhook, even going so far as to tie the snug line at the back of the sled to the closest tree to keep the dogs from getting spooked and taking off on her. If they did, neither she nor the pilot stood a chance. Holly scrambled around the tail of the plane and attempted to prepare herself for what she might find inside. "Please don't be dead." "Hey. Hello. Mr. McGarrity. McGarrity, can you hear me? Come on, open your eyes. Open your eyes." Ty hated the annoying voice pulling him from a warm, deep sleep. "Ty McGarrity, open your eyes." He heard a groan, vaguely recognizing it as his own. Waking up a bit more, he realized he wasn't as warm as he thought. Where was that draft coming from? "Oh, thank God. That's it," the woman continued. "No, don't close your eyes." Ty turned his head away from the voice deafening his right ear, a wave of nausea washing over him. Ah, man. What had old man Arnold fed him before takeoff? A plate of food poisoning? "Listen to me. Are you listening? I can't get you out of here on my own, and we can't wait for help or we'll freeze to death. Wake up before we both turn into icicles." The woman's desperate tone, her fear cracked through the heavy weight holding him submersed. Ty jerked his head up, groaning again because of the pain skittering through his brain as a result. Where was he? What happened? His eyes burned and were coated with something sticky. "Here. Let me." The woman wiped a cloth over his face. "Ow," he said with a flinch, blinded by the piercing pain jabbing into his brain because of the bright light pointed in his direction. "Sorry. I'll move it." It took some time for the pain to fade and his gaze to adjust, but the sharp smell of fuel cleared more of the cobwebs from his brain. Fuel. He rolled his head on the seat and stared at the face hovering in front of his. "We have to get out of here." "That's right. But you have to help me." "Help her? Was she hurt?" He narrowed his gaze on the woman speaking to him, and the shadow she cast became clearer. Mouth. Nose. Wide eyes. Beautiful, beautiful face. A dark stain on the white scarf hanging from her neck. "You're hurt." "What?" "No. No, I'm fine. I used it to wipe the blood off your face. I'm okay. You're the one who's hurt." "Good." He didn't like it when others were hurt, especially women. "Keep those eyes open, McGarrity." The cold seeped into his skin and made him shiver. "You sound like my CO." "Ah, military, huh?" "Yeah, or I was. Why was everything so confusing? He shifted in the seat and grimaced. His muscles were cramping, locking up from the cold. What were they doing out here? You can tell me all about it as soon as we get you out of here. Tai nodded his understanding, bits and pieces coming back to him in chaotic flashes. Flying. The snowstorm. Radioing for help. He'd crashed. Can you breathe okay? Anything broken? No. I don't think so. He lifted his hand to his aching head. She gently turned his face toward hers. Oh, that cut is still bleeding like crazy. Here, maybe this will help. She took off her scarf and wrapped it around his head several times, fitting his knit cap over it to hold it in place once she was done. That will have to do for now. The wind's blowing so hard, I'm afraid we might flip. Can you move your legs? Knees and toes and everything in between. Ribs okay? Her questions flew at him faster than he could process them with his scrambled brain, but he got the gist. He shifted again, moving one foot into the small area where she stood hunched over him. So far, so good. But then he tried to move his left foot and couldn't. What's wrong? Something held him trapped. Ah, poor Nessie. Help me up. His rescuer unbuckled the straps holding him in place and retreated in the cramped confines so that she could wrap her arms around him from behind. Tai tried to exit the seat, but his left foot was pinned. A few gentle yanks didn't budge it, but every pull sent pain streaking up his leg. Stop, she ordered. Are you hurting yourself? His throbbing brain bounced off the inside of his skull, and his arms shook with the effort it took to hold himself upright on one foot while trying to free the other in the unstable plane. Get out of here. I'm coming. Her hands tightened against his stomach. I'm not leaving you. Let me help. The woman moved so that she balanced over the pilot seat, the headrest shoved into her stomach, her hands extended to help free his trapped leg. Tai twisted, pulled, groaned at the pain, and finally managed to get his foot unstuck from beneath the collapsed control panel. Is it broken? She asked, back on her feet. He put his weight on his foot. Another surge of nausea bubbled into his throat when pain ripped through him, but dazed as he was, Tai managed a thankful prayer. At least his foot was still attached. We'll find out later. He straightened as much as he could inside the damaged hull of the Cessna, sliding an arm around the woman's shoulders at her urging. Don't pass out on me, she ordered, raising her voice to be heard over the howling wind. I can't carry you, and with that bump on your head you have to stay awake. Get used to me asking you if you're awake. Got it? Yeah. I hear you. Even as he said the words, his lashes felt weighted, his eyes burning from the sting of blood. I can't see. Just hold on to me and this. Don't drop it. She pressed the flashlight into the hand of the arm he had wrapped around her shoulders, and he gripped them both like lifelines. The woman helped him to a hole ripped out of Nessie's side. She eased him to the floor and Tai clutched the flashlight while she exited the plane. Come on. Lean on me. The wind blew them into Nessie's body once they made it out, but the plane also acted as a barrier and kept them upright. The pain forced him to dig deep into a place he didn't know existed to keep moving, when all he wanted to do was close his eyes and sleep. Every step blasted black and red spots in front of his eyes and left him gulping for air and sweating. It wasn't until they reached Nessie's tail that he was able to hear impatient barking, and blinked his eyes clear enough to see the long outline of the sled team that awaited them. Sled dogs? Hey, don't knock it. They're a lot safer than flying in this. Her quick response was followed by a husky laugh that was carried away by the wind. Where are the others? The storm was growing stronger, or else he was growing weaker. and colder. "It's just us," the woman said, panting from the effort of keeping them both upright. Just her. She'd braved this weather alone. The frigid temperature penetrated his clothing, shards of ice biting into his face, as they left the protection of the Cessna and stumbled forward. "Sit there," she ordered, helping him down onto the basket at the front of the sled. Ty groaned his relief, grateful to be off his foot. His teeth chattered, and he could feel the moisture on his skin freezing, his entire body jerking and twitching uncontrollably. "So cold. Ty. That's your name, right?" It was hard to speak when his teeth chattered enough to cut off his tongue. "Yeah." His rescuer dropped blankets over him. "We've got a lot of ground to cover, and we have to do it fast. I know it's going to be hard to stay awake once you get warm, but you have to fight it. Don't go to sleep." "Okay." He couldn't hear himself say the word, and he doubted she heard it either. "Think of Gramps. Beth's kids. You can't leave them alone in this crazy world. Stay with me, McGarrity. I don't want to get to where we're going, only to find you dead." Beneath the blanket, he forced his lashes up, his eyes open, able to see the swirling snow thanks to the lantern his rescuer had fastened above him. It was like being inside a snow globe. "Holly to base. He's alive. I have him," she yelled. "I'm bringing him in." Ty heard a man's voice but couldn't make out the words. "No, it's too far. Just be ready for us. Holly out. Moxie. Moxie hike." Holly stared out at the thickening snow and reminded herself she had no choice. The snowstorm had become blizzard-like in its intensity, the temperature and conditions getting progressively worse. Forget the rules. This was life and death. Not only Ty McGarrity's, but potentially her life and those of the dogs. An exception could be made under such extreme conditions. Outsiders were banned from the compound. No exceptions. Until now. She knew the time was coming when her father, and the rest of the compound and their organization, expected her to fill his position as organization leader, protector, village elder, and mentor. This was her first step in that direction. In a situation like this, life took precedence over the risk. Ty needed more medical attention than she could capably dispense. The only thing to do was take him home to the compound. She shifted her weight on the runners, dreading the confrontation she faced. Everyone inside their off-the-grid home would know she had broken their most sacred rule. Right now, Devon was no doubt sounding the alarm, placing the village on lockdown so there was as little movement as possible. She would answer for her actions. Be held accountable. Not to Devon, she refused to answer to him, but to her father and the Elder Council. But why should the pilot suffer needlessly when the compound's doctor was a sled ride away? What rule was worth risking a man's life? And when Ty McGarrity is better, alert, then they would deal with him, but at least he would be alive. Having reached the end of the valley, she urged the dogs into the forest, up the path that wound through the mountains. The dogs were eager, and despite the blinding snow and wind, they made good time, though it seemed to take hours because she was so aware of the pilot's injuries. Moxie led the team into the final turn approaching the village, and Holly leaned into the curve, her eyes bleary and body heavy from the long day and the fading adrenaline rush of the rescue. Devon's demand for her to meet him on a trail away from the compound, so as to allow Devon to take the pilot onto the next closest village, was too dangerous. Not only for Ty McGarrity, but Devon and the guards responsible for transporting the pilot over mountains in the middle of this as well. The temperature had dropped by several more degrees, and the bitter wind gusts were so bone-chilling, she wished for another layer. The dogs pulled them higher, deeper into the concealing forest, midway up the mountain. She glanced down, the lanterns attached to the sled allowing her to see the top of Tai's knit hat, despite the mound of blankets she had placed over him. His face was covered, and the whiteout conditions forming around them kept her from having to take the false trails and add to their time. 20 minutes later, Holly approached the compound's east entry and found Devon waiting along with some of his men outside of the guardhouse. She could see the anger in Devon's expression, and her heart picked up speed. "Whoa," she called to the dogs, commanding them to stop. She could feel multiple sets of eyes on her, peering out from within the compound's buildings and the many small cottages dotting the woods around them. The trees protected them from the worst of the wind, but the air around them was filled with the popping and cracking sounds of branches breaking beneath the weight of the snow and ice. "Take him to the infirmary," she said to the guards. "Is Jamie waiting?" she asked Devon. "Yes." The word was growled low and bordering on a hiss. Holly lifted her chin and turned to the guard stepping onto the sled's runners. "I'll be there soon to take the dogs home." "Yes, ma'am." The guard got the sled moving, and despite the cold and the snow chilling her to the bone, Holly waited, determined to stand toe-to-toe with Devon rather than show weakness. Finally, he bit out a word under his breath and opened the door of the building. "Best to just get it over with," she mused. "What have you done?" Devon asked once they had stepped inside. Devon's office was by the exit, and Holly walked toward it without hesitation, hearing the exterior door opening again to admit several of Devon's men. "I've saved a man's life. And probably yours," she said, moving directly to the old-fashioned heating stove. "What's the latest weather report?" Devon shut his office door. "A blizzard advisory has been issued." So she was right. Spend as much time in the forest as she did, and a person learned to read certain things. Not that Devon apparently appreciated the fact. "The pilot has a concussion, and his foot may be broken." Devon closed the distance remaining between them. She was tall at 5'8", but Devon was taller, and she had to tilt her head back to maintain eye contact. "You should have let us take care of him." "I was closer," she countered. "He could have frozen to death before you got to him." "You are our future. You should not be risking yourself. And bringing him here. He is in no condition to travel. How could letting him remain exposed to the weather and untreated until you showed up, and then hauling him over mountains be anything but cruel?" Staring up into her friend's handsome face, she saw the way Devon's brown eyes had turned molten gold with his upset. She waited impatiently, refusing to give in and voice regret she didn't feel, simply because she knew it's what he wanted. "Not gonna happen." "Why are you really upset, Devon?" "Because I disobeyed the rules, or you." "Don't change the subject. I'm merely trying to do my job." "And I'm trying to do mine, which is set an example as the future leader of this community." "And you think you did that tonight?"
"Yes. I showed compassion. I proved that I would not allow someone to suffer needlessly when I could do something about it.
Even though by bringing him here, you've risked us all because of your inability to follow the rules?" Holly fisted her gloved hands and forced her shoulders to lower from her ears. The scent of wood smoke and baked goods teased her senses and made her stomach growl, her body aching for heat and food and the comfort of her bed. But Devon had to be handled first. He's barely conscious and saw nothing of the trails. "You couldn't see more than a few feet in front of you out there. It will be fine." Devon didn't appear convinced, despite her reassurance. "Holly, your father left the security and safety of this village and everyone in it to me. That includes you. When I told you to stay put, I do not take orders from you." She stated it softly,
But there was no denying the strength of her tone, the purpose. She would not bow down. If Devon liked her, wanted her, if in time they had a future together, he had to accept her for who she was. He ran a hand over his head, yanking off his cap in visible frustration. You had no idea what you were getting yourself involved in. You had no idea what he was carrying, if the plane might explode. If he was dangerous. It didn't. He wasn't. And when someone's life is at stake, are those really the things to ask first? You could have been injured getting him out of the wreckage. What would you have done then? Now he had her. Because with that question, he revealed a wealth of emotion on his face, and seeing it made her feel guilty that she'd worried him. Devon had been her friend since childhood, and if anyone had a clue of the pressures she faced, it was him. I would have dealt with the problem. The same way you would have dealt with it. I would have had others there to help me. And she had been entirely alone. She thought of the way the plane had rocked in the wind, unsteady, ready to flip. Look, Dev, I can't say it won't happen again, she said as a concession, but I'll remember that next time. A rough huff of a laugh rumbled out of his chest, and he shook his head at her. I mean it. I hear what you're saying, but you can't argue about things that didn't happen. I understand your concern, but I am here now, see? Concern. Devon broke off, the word muffled by the gloved hand he ran over his mouth. Obviously irritated, he yanked the gloves off and tossed them onto his desk, scattering papers in the process. Holly, what I feel for you is more than concern. When are you going to see that? She saw it now. She heard it in his voice, felt it in the tension he carried. And she cared for him, too. Growing up, they had been friends, good friends. But things had changed since she had taken on more responsibility from her father, and Devon rose amongst the ranks of the guards. Maybe if things were different, and she didn't feel like Devon wanted to control her, she might feel more for him. But she had so much ahead of her, so much to learn, that she couldn't add the pressure of dealing with Devon to it. I was fine. I don't like it when you're out there alone. Especially when I think you're safe, and then you go sledding into a blizzard. It was just a little snow, she said, managing the words with a smile. Devon settled his hips against the edge of his desk and stared at her. Invite me to come with you next time. You know I would welcome the invitation and keep you safe. Devon had offered to accompany her before, and while she had considered it a time or two, she had also found herself making excuses and putting him off. Of all the men in her village, Devon was the best. The most handsome, the most commanding, the most interesting to her. But still. It's my private place, she said, recognizing disappointment in Devon's gaze before he disguised it. One I'm not ready to share yet. Not with Devon, not with anyone. Devon stood and moved to sit in his desk chair. The position of authority? Anna is worried. Go home and put her mind to rest. I will, after I check in at the infirmary, she said, taking the opportunity to leave. Holly. She barely managed to restrain a laugh at his flummoxed expression and moved toward the door. Goodbye, Dev. Keep it up and your father will return early, just because you've gotten on his bad side, Devon called after her, his tone grumbling. Truth be told, if she continued breaking the compound's rules, being on her father's bad side would be the least of her worries.